Real life.
Superpowers.
And she said, oh, I just signed with someone. And I said, that's okay. You know what? I know that I'll be an asset to any organization that's going to take me. Now, I'll just say I was 23 at the time. And she was so impressed by that, like, wording. She said to me, I had to see this person, like, who said to me, I'll be an asset to any. So I went there, and it was a good match. And I did it for 3 years. And I would say that would be the most significant 3 years of my career.
Hey, everyone. In this episode, we speak with Shiri Grothbard, culture architect, community builder, and employer branding expert. Shiri spent over 2 decades exploring how people shape companies and how companies shape people. From co-founding GCMO, Israel's leading marketing leadership community, to shaping culture at AppsFlyer and Verbit, she's built her career on connecting values, storytelling, and growth. At its core, her leadership is about building people. A vocal advocate for women's leadership, Shiri speaks openly about breaking barriers, lifting others as she climbs, and rewriting the narratives that hold women back. Whether mentoring future leaders or challenging limiting norms, she walks the talk. Her approach blends bold self-belief with pragmatic experimentation, and her path illustrates the power of intentionality and presence, whether you're building a culture, a career, or a community. Enjoy your listen.
Real life.
Superpowers. Superpowers.
Hey, Shiri, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Hey.
What's keeping you busy these days?
Well, we just came back from New York, where we launched our GCMO East Coast chapter, which is actually something I'm happy about, but I'm also sad about it because the whole idea of GCMO is keeping these talented marketeers here in Israel and kind of showing the world that there's no need to take the marketing out of Israel because we do kick-ass. Can I say kick-ass on your podcast?
Yes. Definitely. Okay.
We do kick-ass marketing here too. But the reality is that a lot of very talented people have left in the last, year and a half, 2 years. So we wound it up with a lot of people from GCMO that are literally on the East Coast now. So you're like, okay, so you probably don't want to be a part of the community anymore because you're not here. They're like, no, we certainly want to stay. So we opened a chapter there. So it's a happy yet sweet, sweet, sad occasion in a way.
Yeah, there's many reasons that are clear that make this not so happy with respect to people leaving and everything that that means.
But I will say that I was there in New Jersey on the day that Idan was released. So mm-hmm. I saw how it looks different, how they're partying.
How does it look like?
So first of all, they were standing there for hours. It was 5 o'clock in the morning because it started around noon. So, and people were very, very excited, I think they also watched, the Israeli ones, but this was one of their own. Tenant Fly is really like a small kibbutz within New Jersey where everyone knows everyone and people know his mom. So people were really excited. And actually the talk that I gave on the GCMO chapter was about the campaign that we did for Sasha Tupanov, who was also kidnapped. So it was, the chain of event, the way, how the stars all line up on that same day. It was actually a really emotional experience. To see,
they were
standing with flags. Yeah.
Okay, so let's start basic. What's so talented about our Israelis?
I would say the first thing is our, it's really banal, but it's our Israeli chutzpah. And I get this a lot. Like people say, you're not afraid to try new things. And we're not. I don't know if, we can look into the anthropology of it or the sociology of it, surviving mode. But I think it goes more than that. I think that because we're so small, because we kind of need to prove ourselves. I hear this a lot. People saying like, okay, first we'll do it here in Israel and then we'll take it. I think we're very daring in our, in our mind, in our perspective, the things that we're willing to try as marketeers. I would say that's the number one, like, good characteristic of an Israeli marketeer. We're not afraid to try new things.
You know, there's this quote that stuck with me, and I can't remember who said it or is known to have said it, but it says, even if I knew that the world would end tomorrow, I would still plant that tree. And I think all the more, I think it was always true about Israeli, it's not marketeers, all right? It's like the Israelis in general. And I think since October 23rd, it's become all the more true. So I think, you know, if there's in every darkness, there's also light, and there's some things that are good that come out of it, then I think the resilience and that cherishing the moment and being more daring is something that we're sensing more since, because we sort of, everything sort of, you know, priorities suddenly aligned in a way that it's not cliche, it's just true. Like, I think so many of us, if not all of us, realized this is really not a rehearsal, this is it.
What do you think about this theory? Okay, my theory is, just because I'm also a Canadian Jew that came to Israel, what do you think about this theory? Usually when your father is a football champion, then you believe that you can be a football champion. If your father is a startup CEO, very successful woman, then you believe you can become that. So how about I say this? Because we're small, we have really high beliefs because we've seen someone around us do the unbelievable.
I like that. I want to go back just like 2 seconds ago, what you say about not being able to be what you can't see. That's something that I say a lot in terms of women and young women, and why we need more women role models, because you can't be what you can't see. So I 100% agree with you. I would even throw into the metrics that I'll take it from a different field. Okay. My mom, for a very long time, she used to coordinate the cardiology research in Soroka Hospital, okay? And the reason so many companies, like European and American companies, wanted to do the research here is the diversity, okay? Because the people you get are not just, you know, Caucasian. Like, if you do this in Sweden, you only get white, Swedish, I would say blue-eyed people. Well, that might be a general thing to do. But here, we really do have a very, like, strong diversity, you know, different people from different ways of thinking. So I think it also, like, you kind of have to operate in, you know, when we say inclusion, a market,
there's a large inclusion, like, proportionally.
Exactly. But when you say global marketing, that's a big deal, because you're not saying the same, it's not the same messages for the European crowd. Even putting the European crowd on one matrix is not right, but, you know, you don't speak the same way to German people as you would to American people. And also here I have a problem, because here in Israel, we kind of look at America and it's like San Francisco and New York. But there's a really big chunk in the middle that's not speaking the same language. And if these are your client, you totally need to change the message. And I think that in our own, I would say, like, nature inclination, we're more adaptable in that way. And I might, like, being just like patting us on the shoulder, but I've seen it with a lot of companies.
But, you know, having that said, would you say, okay, so that's on the good side. On the other side, you call it chutzpah, which they can ambiguously call it courage or confidence or something in that sense. So, but on the other side, that means they also have courage and confidence that they understand the Midwest, okay, more than they really do. So
you're talking about the arrogance.
I believe that everything is the same energy. So if with confidence is taking that energy to a good place, while arrogance is taking it to a bad place. Like, jealousy is a bad thing, but competitiveness is great. So how do you balance that when you're working with these talented people?
So, okay, two thoughts on that. I think that also part of being sort of courageous about it is also knowing where to cut your losses. You thought, like, okay, that Asian market is your market and you're going full speed, ta 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 ta. If you see that it's not working, we're also perfectly fine with just folding it and moving on. I've worked for several companies. I would say that, like, maybe American companies, they'll, like, give it another shot, just because you've already started the penetration to this marketing. You don't want we're not that, I would say we're not that sold on anything. Like you, we'll try it. It doesn't work. We'll try something else. It's
make
fine.
A mistake, okay. But never make it twice.
True. True. But we're not afraid to make that mistake.
Of course.
And I think that's the thing about, again, I would say about Israeli marketeers, but there's like, you know, why I don't say courage and I say chutzpah, because chutzpah is also the bad side of it, where it's not always received so nice on the other end when we're like, you know, in your face saying what we're thinking. I've learned that the hard way. This is a long time ago. This was like one of my first jobs in an international organization. And I said to someone about something that they said that it wasn't relevant to the conversation. It wasn't relevant to the conversation. But then I got a call from their boss, from their like manager, and said that they were highly offended by me. And they know that I did not mean it. So just so I know that you can't say to people that something that they're saying is unrelevant. It's not relevant. So that's also something like I do feel that like on the other side, I like the chutzpah, but we can also learn a little bit about being more tactful. But again, being not tactful a lot of the times helped us in doing very, you know, like kind of outrageous, breaking new grounds, new things. We're not afraid to do it.
Hey, look, it just got a president elected the second time in the United States.
Yes, and he's very bold and outrageous in many ways.
Yeah, maybe things aren't exactly in the templates that we wanted to grow up thinking that everything can be put into a certain box of right and wrong. I guess I guess reality unfolds in a different way.
Tactful and efficiency collides. And you can't be tactile and super efficient. You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
It's the balance.
No, I agree with them. I feel that way. And also I think that, you know, in the last 5 years, we've been throwing thrown so many curveballs, you know, with COVID and then the war.
Inflation,
and then like
war.
Whoever thought that we're
sharpening our toolkit so much.
Yes. I'm also asked like, you know, about the post-trauma. And I'm like, what post-trauma? We're still in the midst of it. Yeah, we're not in the post stage.
Friend said to me something funny. He said, listen, let's not call it post. It's just trauma. So like we're presently just, you know, plainly day by day trauma.
So true. So true.
We're excited to be collaborating with the Israeli website CTEK, owned by Kalkalist, Israel's leading business newspaper. CTEK is the gateway of the Israeli high tech to the tech world and vice versa. If you're not already a regular reader, we strongly recommend that you check out kalkalistech.com, kalkalistech.com, to stay up to date on all high-impact stories from the Israeli tech scene.
Sure, I want to circle back. You know, you were talking about how you both were talking about how you can't be it if you can't see it. And you had a career path that... You very much are living a leadership path and making bold moves. You have a seat at the table, and I think it seems that you always took it. So I'm wondering, A, you know, the obvious question is, did you have that vision? Who did you see that enabled, if at all? Because perhaps it was a Shiri in your head. Sometimes maybe you can see it, but not like actually see it, but see it and like make it happen. And be like, if you can just take it through that path, like how did you evolve into where you are now, with now not being like the specific position, but in general you're doing.
Okay, so I'll start. I'll give a little bit about my path because it is a winding one. Yeah. So I started as a journalist, which is something I've always wanted to do since I was a child. I was like, this is what I want to do, and then. So I started and studied journalism, and that was like the success of my class because I started working in a newspaper right after, you know, we finished our first degree. Marilyn Monroe said something that I use about my career at journalism. She said, dreaming about being an actress and actually being an actress are two totally different things. That pretty much summarizes my journalistic career. I used to work in Haaretz and then in Yediot Ahronot. And I really hated every moment of it because I thought I could change the world with, you know, my ideas and the written word. I don't want to discourage anyone, but it's very far from what I've just said. And then I started, this was, you know, how women always say, oh, and then I got lucky and I got this opportunity. I don't like it when women say that because I think we create our own opportunities. And one of the people who worked with me in the newspaper, I called her up and I said, listen, I'm leaving and, you know, I want to do something else. And she said, my mom is opening this school. It's Kellogg, Kellogg Akanati. Maybe you heard about it. It's a very prestigious program. And it's just for high tech. And they're looking for someone who knows English well. And I come from a bilingual house. My mom's American. My dad's Israeli. We spoke very weird in the house. We were gulechting everywhere. And no one really understood what we said until we were seven. But in that particular situation, so I called her up and I said, you know, listen, your daughter said that you might be looking. And she said, oh, I just signed with someone. And I said, that's okay. You know what? I know that I'll be an asset to any organization that's going to take me. Now, I'll just say I was 23 at the time. And she was so impressed by that, like, wording. She said to me, I had to see this person, like, who said to me, I'll be an asset to any. So I went there, and it was a good match. And I did it for 3 years. And I would say that would be the most significant 3 years of my career because it really opened my mind. Basically, it was an MBA for, you know, the top CEOs here in Israel.
It's in the University of Tel Aviv.
It's in the University of Tel Aviv. It's a cohort. It's like a joint venture with Kellogg. And this specific program was only for high tech. And this was in the year 2000, which, if you remember, was actually not the greatest year. So a lot of the people that came were actually international because we gave the same degree as they did in Kellogg, but for about a third of the price and the living expenses in Tel Aviv, at least back then, were less than Evanston, Illinois, which is where Kellogg is. So this was a very interesting experience. I would say that all in all, I also kind of did the MBA, not officially, but I would go into the courses and it really like opened my mind. So at the age of, I don't know, like 25, when the school was, actually they closed it, not because of me, but I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to be a CEO, just like all these other white men. This also has to be said. We had only about two or three women in each class, which we really had to pick.
Just to clarify, this is an MBA, so everybody understands. It's an MBA for people who have major experience in the market. It's really hard to get into, and they're CEOs of global companies, right? So you're 23 years old.
And this was high tech. This
you're 23 years old. You haven't managed. So you never managed a high tech company, right? But you want to do
it. Before that, no.
So you're studying business administration, and they're talking about culture, organizations, and you're like, yeah, I can do this.
Look, I don't know how you say her. I mean, I know how you say it, but I always say it wrong. But, you know, Bilby?
Benjamin Netanyahu, right?
No, Bilby. Bilby, the one with Bilby,
the redhead with the ponytails, right. The two.
Exactly. Ponytails. So she says these things. I kind of grew up on this book, and she says, yeah, I've never done it, so I'll probably be really good at that. And that's kind of what I said to myself. I was like, okay, I was never a CEO, but I see these people. I'm just as qualified. I'll probably be really good at it. A bit, I don't know, maybe out of touch or hallucinated for someone so young, but that's what I wanted to be. And it took me another 5 years. At the age of 32, I was appointed to my first CEO job at a high-tech company, which I was the first employee of. We basically did lead generation for higher education, was the first of, and then Internet Gold, which was like the largest media group in Israel at that time, bought 50% of us. And then in a deal that's called Bambi, which means like buy me, buy you. Exactly. Yes. Which I had nothing, you know, I didn't really know anything about it. And that particular day, my husband, who by the way, never interferes in anything that I do. And I never knew anything about his career because he was like an army person. But at that particular day, he was like, you know, Shiri, here's my intuition. He's like, you know, just be more silent, like be quiet at this particular meeting. And I was, and they offered a deal that was like 3x, which what we thought about. So it's a good thing that I kept my mouth shut. By the way, in negotiation, always get the other side to talk first. That's like a good thing. And they bought the company. And at the time, they had put in a clause that says that I have to stay in the company for 5 years, which I thought was amazing. Oh God, there's so much into me.
Was there an earnout in the deal itself?
No, not at first. Only after, so they bought 50% of the company. And then after 18 months, which I had to sign that I'll stay for 18 months, they like fulfilled the 100%. And then when I said, listen, guys, I don't want to stay here for 5 years, you know, I want to do my own thing. So they offered me the CEO position. And here's, you know, I'll be the honest part. I really wanted to be the CEO, but I don't really have the good qualification to be a good CEO. It's kind of like the Israeli children book about the lion and the strawberry. He really wanted the strawberry, but then he doesn't even like strawberry. I really wanted to be a CEO, but I didn't like it at all. I felt like, you know, because before I was doing stuff, I was, you know, all around the country meeting with different, you know, CEOs and selling. And then my work was reduced for like 70% of the time. I just had to do Excels for the board. I'm not good with Excel. I think that's a very good quality for a CEO. I'm more of a PowerPoint and Canva person. And also it was very lonely. There's something at the top where, you know, even when you're not one notch down, then you can share and everything. Once you're the CEO, you're all alone. This was also an interesting company. We were an all-women company at the peak, 24 women. And I'll share a story because it's a funny one. So if you run an all-women company, someone's always pregnant, trying to get pregnant, maternity leave. And these were a lot of women. So I would brought in, you know, people to... for a maternity leave for them. And at one point they came to me, the ladies, and they were like, Shiri, we don't want you to bring anyone else in while we're going on maternity leave. And we've decided that we're going to coordinate the next pregnancies together. And when each person leaves, we're going to take her responsibilities and share them among us, which actually happened. And it was great. And then when Shaul Ilovich bought Bezeq, which is like the largest phone company, then all these little companies, they kind of sold us off. And I was already, okay, bye at that time. But it was an interesting experience. It was very interesting. I'll try to speed up because I feel like I'm talking a lot. I opened my own company after, you know, kind of understanding how that works. I have to say that my experiences with different VCs and angels at that time was amazing. They really wanted women. They were like, yeah, just come, like whatever idea you have. There were so few. They literally, one of the, I'm not sure if it was Pitango or Viola at the time, they said, you're like the third woman we've seen all year. Women don't pitch their ideas. So that was an interesting round for me. I ended up with an angel. Basically, he got his investment back in 18 months. This was Joint Digital Talent Agency. And we did, I would say, like smart recruiting with an algorithm for these new marketing positions that no one knew how to recruit for, like PPC or media buying. This is not something that you learn in university. So the recruiters had a hard time understanding who would be a good fit for that. Smart. So we fell into a blue ocean, and that was very interesting.
I don't think you fell into anything, did you?
Okay, so I created it, but I don't want to like sound very arrogant, but yes, we saw a niche and I thought it was a good one. I did and that time I literally told the investor, I was like, I don't want to be the CEO of the company. I don't think I do good. I'm not, you know, that's not my superpowers.
Let's talk about that for a second. And marketing. I'm really interested in that. Okay. Because you're such an inspiration. One of the things is great. You tried a lot of things. And what I love also about really communicating, you also know what you don't like or what you're not good at, which is the only way to do it is you try things out. Now, question specifically. So I'm now a woman who wants to know, well, I'm not, but I, for this moment I am, a woman that wants to know, should I become a CEO or should I become an entrepreneur? Okay. Now, you said you're lonely in the top, by the way, totally, you know, you can see it by the pyramid. You know, like it's not... It shouldn't be a surprise. There's one box on the top. You're there. Now, an entrepreneur, do you not feel lonely? Like what? You know what I mean? Like, is that totally different? Like, is the problem that as a CEO, you're more enabling than doing? But the same thing can happen as an entrepreneur. At the end of the day, even the CEO makes you irrelevant. And you're, again, you know, either a director or really irrelevant and just enabling, you know, bringing money in, culture, whatever. Like, it's an open question, but what was...
Yeah, but what mostly happens with a lot of Israeli entrepreneurs that they take on the CEO role because it's their company.
But we don't like
that. The thing is, the fact that you know how to, you know, put something from the ground up, like from scratch to, does not mean that you can run it after 5 years. And I see it a lot. Actually, a lot of these entrepreneurs would actually really benefit their companies if they step down at that point.
But what's the difference?
What's that?
I now I'm interested to understand, what is the big difference? Like, why are you amazing at being an entrepreneur? And why you specifically think that as CEO, you can find better people?
Oh, okay. Because one is very strategic and one is very tactical. At the end of the day, a CEO's job is very tactical. You got your P&L, you got to follow it. You got to see that, you know, you have live and die by Excel, where is an entrepreneur and a lot of, you know, greater entrepreneurs than I am, like, you know, Guy Kawasaki or, you know, Ogidoro Mihai would tell you, I think our best quality is I get like motivated when people tell me, no, that's not a good idea. That actually gives me like, I'm onto something. Like the more they tell me that this is like a funny idea or something's not working, it actually motivates me. The same thing happened with Neil Shamim. My first idea about doing paper lead, I remember, okay, so I made a call to, it's called Moked HaModot HaArtzi. They once did the, like if you wanted to buy magazine, like in the newspaper, you had to call them. And we would buy it, and they were really expensive back then, like 80,000 shekels for, you know, for a three-color.
Three-color page.
Yeah, the newspaper. Like the whole thing. And you had to wait till 3 o'clock in the morning to approve it. But that's like a different thing. We're already over that. And I would get the team in on Sunday because we've just, you know, released this big ad on the newspaper on Saturday. And sometimes we'd get calls and sometimes we didn't. But there's no correlation between that and that. So I called Moked HaModot HaArtzi. I thought I had the most amazing idea. I told her, listen, you and I are going to call the phone company right now. We're going to get a new number that only you, me, and the people who are going to read this on Saturday will know this phone number. And we're going to call Bezeq afterwards. And every, you know, lead, like every incoming call, even if someone just called and it was a wrong number, I'll pay you 1,000 shekels. And she couldn't stop laughing. She's like, no, we're not going to do that. You're going to pay me 80,000 shekels and I don't care who's going to, you know, call or not call. And that was the entire, like, once she said, no, we can't do that, I was like, we can do that. That's what we need to do. And that was the entire like idea of Paul Neil Shamim, was that you don't pay for just, you know, being, I don't know, first or second or third, you pay for the lead. And I literally had to explain to people what leads are. Lead is a person that wants to connect with you. You get their phone number, you get their, it was early days back then. But okay, so just to answer your question, I think one is very tactical and one you have to have a drive. You have to, like, the no has to motivate you. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Let's talk about why. Why is the no a motivation for you?
For me, particularly?
Like, what do you have to prove? You know what I mean? Like, if you're talented, you're amazing, you've done this before, why is no still annoying you enough to prove it to total strangers, okay, that probably don't even have the qualifications to judge you?
If you ask my husband, he'll say that that's the way to motivate me. Just tell Shiri that she can't do something and then she'll
understand.
Sure,
but why?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a psychological thing. I was brought up in kibbutz and there were no girls in my age group. So until the age of six, it was only me and the boys and you could not tell me apart. We had the same hairdo. We all peed standing up because that's what you do. And I literally talked like a boy, a very strange boy. You talk like half English and half Hebrew. But I don't know, maybe from there, I think it really has to do with character. You know how about 30 years ago, they've decided to take narcissism out of the DSM, which is like the disorder, like the book of disorders, because literally they found out that most of the people who are very successful entrepreneurs hold all these quality. So maybe I'm one of the, I don't know. It's hard for me to like speak about myself that way. I just know that it always been that way. Like if
I've never seen a narcissist that said he's not good at something. So,
oh yeah, no, I'm not good at a lot of things.
Okay. So let's take that out of the bucket. It's not that, okay. but definitely like, let's like, just sorry, I have curiosity. So you're saying you were the only, were you trying to prove that you're good, as good as the boys?
No, I think I was just
that you're not good at something.
No, I think it's
you're not good.
Maybe.
You have this inner belief. I'll tell you why. Because the thing is to hold that. So, okay. There's like, if I have to say an inspiration when you're talking, so Michael Jordan's two sentences that you said. One, he said, when he threw a ball, I can never, so they said, are you not scared of taking those clutch shots? So he said, how can I be scared of a shot that I didn't take? Okay, so he said that before.
I can totally relate.
I saw the correlation. The second thing is, he found, because he had to be in the top level, he used to imagine nemesises, right? Create this inner story to find something competitive to come out of him, okay? But the reason was he was trying to brain hack himself into doing this, because at the end of the day, this other guy in his head wasn't competing. You know, it wasn't the same game. He just made, oh, he looked at me wrong. I'm going to kick his ass. I'm saving you.
So I love that one. But I will say this, a lot of the time, if I can't imagine it, then I'm probably not able to do it. But I have a very vivid and big imagination. So a lot of things that I can imagine and people can't really see, if I can see it, I could do it. I can do it. And also, I'm not afraid to fail. You know, if you don't try, if you don't put yourself out there.
Is that the motivation? That you have a scenario inside your head that you know, you believe it's true. And then people say, I don't believe you. And then you're like, I see it. It's over here. Okay. Like,
yes. If I can see it, I can pull it through. I can do it. And I do believe in it. I'll say something now, and people don't know me, so this does not come from any like arrogancy or anything like this. But every job interview I took in my life, I swear to God, the last like thought that I had before I came into the interview was, they're going to be so lucky if I decide to take this job. Because if I look at track record, again, I'm not trying to be arrogant, but if you look at track record, every company that I've been with, I've made a big change. So they're going to be lucky if I decide to go. And I think once you kind of perceive yourself this way, like I see myself as a talent that can come into a company and do a lot of things, then like I have the power. Like, you know, if they don't want to, they're lost.
But that's after you did it multiple times. You told the story.
No, I always thought about it myself.
That's
that
what
way.
I'm saying. In the beginning, you told the story already that you were 23 and had the same confidence.
True.
Why?
Yeah. I don't know. Sherry, are you not just born that way? I don't know.
No, but this is so fascinating because you have this mental strategy that is so productive for you and so empowering, and you have this strong self-talk. And I'm tying back to you saying, if you can't imagine, if you can't see it, then you can't make it happen, but it doesn't apply for you. And that makes me wonder, like, you were the only girl till the age of 6. So does that play in your favor, or is it the other way around? Meaning, were you just equal? And then you didn't have that voice that feels somehow less, and I'm asking that because I'm not sure 6-year-olds do feel less even if they're among, you know, other girls. So I don't know when in society it happens that suddenly the boys are associated with success more. And where in your path were you able to pave that, you know, that road, you know, with the tunnel vision? And that, and was there a woman at the end of that tunnel vision that you could look up to or not? Do you understand what I'm asking? Like, how are you able to center yourself towards that mental strategy that is so empowering and such a strong self-talk?
I wouldn't really know. I feel like that's the way I am, but it's not something that I got at home.
What did your mother do?
Yes. And one of the like accusations that I have from my mother, that she ran a very traditional, this is what the man does, you know, this is what the guy does, this is what the mom does. Like, I do the laundry, I take care of the kids, he has to work. I always hated it. I hated it. When my dad used to say, oh, your mom is the educational power and I'm the financial power. I think I was like 13 when I told them, hello, she works in like 3 jobs. How can you say that? And it always bothered me. And I knew, okay, so I was 21. I write a lot. I always have a notebook. And I wrote 3 things. I said, I was 21. I said, I want to marry a person that would worship the ground I walk on. Sorry, I was 21. I want to have a global career. And I want a Jeep Cherokee. So we never got the Jeep, but I did get to do an international career.
Sorry for the Jeep.
No, don't worry. We got a different Jeep. It was just it was too much gas.
Well, I'm sad for the Jeep, not for you. You would have had it all.
Thank you. But I think knowing this and always writing what I want, making it happen. I do this. I also tell a lot of it. Now they have those manifestation and the secret, but we didn't know about these things back then. So I would just kind of keep a journal, and every year on Rosh Hashanah, I would write what I want to happen for me for this year. And it's really interesting looking back, like 20 years, 30 years ago, to see the things that I wrote that actually, like, I think if you're very targeted, if you know what you want, then it's easier to get it. But what you're asking is like, how did I know?
Did you have somebody to have as an example, as a role model, to be able to help you envision?
Unfortunately, no. And I tried to be that role model for other young women. I've been mentorship for, I think I've been mentoring 15 years. I always have at least one or two younger women. And I think it's really important just to have a soundboard. I don't give them the answer. When they call me up, you just, you know, sometimes you just need someone to listen, someone with more experience to kind of help you break it down, to make it less scary. And then they do off, like they get off and they make their own decision. But I wish I had someone like that. The answer is no, I didn't. I also went about it kind of the wrong way because I started my own companies when I was very young. Then I joined other companies like AppsFlyer and Burbit and today at Amazon. So I don't know. And some companies also, by the way, can't really hold people that are very entrepreneurial because our spirit is different. You know, we move things around, we shake things, we make things happen. Some organization, you know, they're not, they don't. They want you to be in your box. So, yeah, so that would not
working,
be
if it's working, don't break it. But question, how about English? How did that contribute?
Wow. I would say the most significant things in my career would be my English, especially in high tech, which, by the way, isn't really fair when you think about it, because I didn't have the right degree. I didn't study technology or anything. I studied media. And then for my second degree, sociology. But what got me in, like in the door, the foot in the door, was actually, yes, my linguistic skills.
Did it also give you that confidence? Is that something that you were aware of in a sense?
Did you about language? Actually, I always feel, and it's so funny, but Israelis who have like, you know, very Israeli English language, they have no problem speaking. And as for me, if I don't find the exact word that I want to articulate myself in, I get like, And no, then you got these Israelis.
Definitely I was actually talking about foot in the door. Like
foot
when you have the confidence,
yes,
to sit 100%. There, you're like, basically, I'm very talented, 1, 2, 3, 4, right? And I always have by default this really great, you know, like language, you know, like that is better than the average. So you're definitely with like, you know, you're going to be pretty good at this, at least, you know, you add that and a lot of persistence, you're in a pretty good place.
True. But again, I'm saying I've met a lot of people, their English
of course
is not that great and they don't let it be a barrier. And as for me, I'm very critical of like what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it. So yes, but it is one of, at least back in the days, like 20 years ago, that was like the thing. If you had English, we didn't really care what you said. She's like, come, we need, you know, people who can help us support AI and everything. It's like, we need Marco and we need people that would help us with content. So that was it. Yeah. But I'll also say another thing. It's also confusing because I have the way English, but I'm not American. I did not grow up in the U.S.
Right.
I'm not like, you know, the culture and everything.
Right.
I'm very Israeli. In my way, which also is confusing to people because I speak the language, but I'm not, you know, culturally.
That's really interesting. I like that fusion. That's an interesting fusion. Okay.
Like, yeah. Saying that's irrelevant. You wouldn't get that from an American, but you got it. He got it in,
right,
this particular voice, which is even, I guess, harder for them to hear. So, yes. So things are lost in translation. A lot of the times, I always tell this funny story that when I, on my first day at AppsFlyer, I came there to do the people innovation. And on the first day, my manager, there was a big meeting, and she said, you're going to bring a deck, right? I was like, yeah, sure. I'll bring the deck. And then I go to the front desk. I'm like, where's my deck? I'm supposed to bring it. And you didn't give me a deck. And they looked at me very oddly and rightfully so. And then I realized that a deck is some kind of presentation that I'm supposed to bring in. But I did not know this language. So I always, like, I say this because, A, it's true. And then I say that the blonde is natural, so I'm allowed to. But it was just a funny kind of lost in translation, yeah, kind of thing that, you know, so,
that,
yeah,
is funny.
And did you feel, did you lose your confidence after that incident? Because I doubt
it. I'm telling it to you, it's a joke. I'm like, first of all, when I realized what it was, I thought it was hilarious. I think I wrote a post about it. Like, here's my first day falling on my face with this deck thing. So just know that when they're saying, and then I got a lot of other things that I wasn't sure, like TBD. I didn't know what TBD was. Like they said, it will be TBD. So I wrote these all kinds of things. If you're going into a high-tech company and you don't know these basic things, here they are. And it's like deck, TBD, all sorts of like, I don't know, initial that you need to know. I also have a good sense of humor about myself.
I love that because that is such a smart move on your end. And I don't even know if you were aware, but just think about it. Like it's your first day, right? And this is quite an embarrassing mistake. And then there's the intersection of what you already know. So you're also a journalist, right? And you put that hat on.
Hilarious. I'm laughing my ass about myself.
It's beyond. You leveraged it. I think you're maybe not consciously, but you're constantly intersecting what you pick up and your other skills, and able, when you're navigating, to take what you already know and take a situation that can take you like a really steep turn and shift the wheel back to where you need and leverage. So whatever the situation is, and even I'm circling back to the 23-year-old who was told no, and you were just able to turn that into the opportunity. I don't know if you planned it, but there's something about assessing a situation and making the most of it in real time that seems unusual. Like, I'm wondering how people can somehow adopt that mindset in a sense, or how can a person who is 23, like Renan was saying, not experienced enough to be able to justify that confidence, but knowing how to make the most of it and knowing how to not lose your center?
So I would say the tip, and this is especially for younger women, do not take yourself so seriously. Okay. I have this thing. I'm not even sure where I got this, picked it up, but it was literally when I was younger. And the thing is, and I tell this to my kids, they know this, it's the, what's the worst case scenario? And if the answer is that I'm healthy and you're healthy and the kids are healthy, then anything else, we can handle it. So don't take yourself so seriously. And if you made a mistake or a typo, I once sent an email to, you know, about a list that I wasn't supposed to send an email to. And the content was also, well, it wasn't derogatory or anything, but it wasn't something that they're supposed to read. And one of my colleagues came in and she was like, I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry for you. That's such a bad. And I was like, you know what? I made a mistake. And then, so I wrote to the whole list something like, has this ever happened to you? Putting your foot in your mouth in front of such a big crowd? Well, hello, that's me. I just sent you this email, blah, blah, blah. So what? What happened? You know, I literally, I know this is like a counter-executive kind of tip, but do not take yourself so seriously. So you made a mistake.
But it's beyond that. There's an action item here, because you're even, if you're able to take the low moments, zoom out, look at the situation from the side, and ask yourself a simple question of, what's the other angle here? What's the storytelling angle here? And how do I leverage this? Then I can imagine that those situations were sometimes actually also the best successes, because probably that email and the following one were actually, it's almost as if you plan this, you can plan it better. I'm sure you got so much, so many eyeballs on that content. And if you were able, and I'm sure you were able to leverage that in that second email, then probably both were somehow able, you know, to get you to where you needed, even if it wasn't planned in the first place.
Yes. And also another advice is, you know, I'd rather just like not ask and then say, oops, sorry. Because if you ask and you're told, no, you can't do this, if you ask for permission, then you can't do it. And sometimes when things are kind of gray and maybe they won't allow it, I just say, don't ask. And then, you know, worst case scenario, come and say, I'm sorry, I really didn't know I could do this again.
There's this saying, ask forgiveness. Don't ask for permission, ask forgiveness.
So that's funny. Yes. No. So I'm, you know what I wanted to say? I just found a new superpower.
Sleep. That's my superpower. I sleep through everything. That's my superpower. Honestly. Yeah.
Wait. So I found a new superpower, and it's funny because it's forgiveness. Okay. The thing is when you say not taking yourself seriously.
Compassion also.
No, it's not compassion. Forgiveness. I'll tell you. It's a real superpower. So when you don't take yourself seriously, right, you allow yourself, human beings, to be human and make human mistakes, it gives you a lot of courage, okay? Because usually our biggest enemy, you know, there's a research right now about entrepreneurs, okay? So yeah. 73% of entrepreneurs, the reason they're not going to entrepreneurship in first world countries is because of fear of failure.
Right.
Whereas in third world countries, where actually there is things, they will starve to death. That's the actually conclusions if they fail. Okay. It is lower. It's 41%. Okay. So let's talk about the first world. The third world, we understand they have no other choice. So they're doing it. But so why are they not scared? Because now we're talking about forgiveness. People don't forgive themselves because of ego. And that's a serious superpower. So your confidence is one, but the forgiveness status is just saying, listen, I'm a human being. Okay. You know, people laugh. They won't believe. I'll take that as motivation. That's fine. Okay. I'll, you know, instead of people leveraging in front of me, I'll just forgive myself and put it out there. Okay. And that's this definite giant superpower that makes you invincible in a sense of criticism, which is like, it's like a force field. You know what I mean?
But thank you for the compliment. But whenever I'm asked about a superpower, I always say I sleep well. And I'm not trying to be funny. Like, if you ask me what's the thing that most contributed to my career, it would be the fact that although I have three kids, I never woke up at night. And had I had to wake up at night, I would not have been successful in my career. I can't do this without an 8 to 9 hour sleep at night.
So wait, what's your weakness then?
Oh, are you kidding me? I have plenty of weaknesses, but it's not sleep. Well, if I don't sleep, then I'm not a human being. That's a weakness. Okay. I think I'm impatient, mostly to myself. Like when you got this, like this advisor, and they come and they say, okay, now we need to do this process, and it's going to take a long time. You know, all these like sort of like HR types that come in with these processes. Even when they just start speaking or the process, I get like, oh, no, I can't do this. I like things fast. And another thing that I'm getting over it as I get older, but I do fall in love with my own ideas. And then when someone doesn't like the idea, which is cool, it's very hard for me. It's like, this is like, someone said to me, Shirley, this is just your idea. It's not your baby. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. But I think it's such a good one. It's hard for me to let go. But I'm working on it. And I think, again, it has to do, like, you gave me a really nice compliment and thank you. But I really don't take myself that seriously.
That's part of it, though. That's exactly part of what Renan is saying.
And if they don't like this idea, okay, so they're wrong. Obviously, a lot of people are wrong. My idea kicks ass. And at the end, we'll do what like, needs to be done. That's okay. I can also give up on certain things. But I don't take it like personally. I don't think that, oh, they didn't like shit. They just didn't like this idea. That is something that I had to work through my career. You know, I've got to separate the person from the idea. And in that sense, I want to actually say something about ego death, which I've just learned about. And that is when people really connect what they're doing with who they are. I'll give you an example. Let's say I'm a lawyer.
What did you call it? Sorry, ego death. Did you say that?
Ego death, yes. Yeah. Let's say I'm a lawyer or I'm a young mom. I've been at home for 2 years and now my kid is going to kindergarten. So you feel that sense of sort of like dying. What am I if I'm not this young person's mother? Or I got disbarred. I'm not a lawyer anymore. Who am I? And I've never really connected myself of being to the what I do. I bring the Shiri. Okay, the Shiri can be at AWS like she is today. She could be an AppStar. She could be a Join. She could be a Verbit. You know, the essence is Shiri. It's not the place that I work for. And that way, you know, we're all, at the end of the day, you know, we're hires. Any company can at any point just say, for a lot of different reasons, not even have to do with your performance. And we've seen it, you know, beginning of the years, there were major layoffs in the big, you know, big five companies. And I don't want to be in a situation where if someone tells me tomorrow, you know, you don't no longer have a job, then I'm like, yeah, no. Okay, this doesn't define who I am. Okay, this is just this phase. Now I'm working for blah, blah, but you know, 2 years ago, I worked for someone else, not me.
It's fascinating because I agree 100%, and I have so many thoughts. I'll say this: it's also parenting advice. You know, we're always told to criticize the behavior, not to label it as a characteristic of sorts. Like, it's not you're selfish. You're acting selfish, and I don't like that type of behavior. And it's also throwing me back to my army days when I was an officer, and I didn't like wearing my ranks. Because I felt like, in a sense, it was a social game for me to see how people speak to me when they see me with my ranks and without. But at the same time, you know, more 20 years in, I'll also admit that it did give me the confidence that I knew that I had them. And I do think that we're social animals, and there's hierarchy that is by nature almost. So, you know, I remember also Seinfeld, I heard an interview and he was saying how, you know, people treat him as royalty because of the status of him being a celebrity with money. And that's like the top in the United States. And I believe it's a very advanced spiritual practicing to be able to truly separate your identity from what you're doing. And I think it's also tricky because our motivation mechanisms are derived of achieving goals. So I genuinely think that once you're able to widen that gap between your achievements and what you do and, you know, your identity, I think magic does unfold probably because you're now able to take yourself less seriously and you're not as impacted by the downside of when things will fail. And I didn't say that by mistake. They will. You know, it's not going to be bulletproof. So I believe that gap is wonderful, and I'm happy that you brought that up actually so articulately.
Thank you. Okay, so you did understand exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yes, do not connect yourself in a way that if this is taken away from you, you're pointless, okay? Like, I brought in the Shiri. I brought her to this company, and I can take her to a different company, or I can do something on my own. I also say this to women in their 40s, because what happens is if you lose your job towards 50, your chances to get a new job are very slim. So always have a backup plan. I mean, it might not get you as much money as your original job, but if you have something to do, then you're not left with this like felt, you know, feeling so, I don't know, incompetent, or you don't know what to do. So, you know, you could be a yoga teacher on your spare time. You can, but always like have something else going on that you don't give someone else that power, that if you're not working for them right now, you don't have anything and you just need to find your new challenge.
You're like less gatekeepers.
Yes. Yes. And I would say another thing, maybe that's a superpower, and I know that sounds kind of like an oxymoron, but I would say vulnerability. I'm not afraid to put my vulnerability out there. I write a lot on LinkedIn, and LinkedIn is like your professional, you know, you're supposed to write about how you did this and that great in your professional life. I also write about different things, and one of the most like posts that got a lot of traction and attention was I came back, this was a few years ago, and I came back from a holiday after a long time to the workplace, and I got an anxiety attack, like a full-blown anxiety attack on the train. It was horrible. I thought I was going to die, literally. And off the track, kind of composed myself together and got to work, and I wrote about it. And actually, it really resonated with a lot of people to see that someone like me, if you're not watching this and just hearing it, so just please know that I'm doing like this with my fingers, like quote unquote, right? But someone like me also experiences the same shit. You know, it happens to the best of us, even someone who's high up in the hierarchy or whatever. I came back from a holiday. I felt I was so disconnected. And I know it also brought up. I started reading the emails on the train, like hundreds of them. You know, I was getting myself more and more into like the anxiety of getting back to work and dealing with this thing. But okay, so here I kind of wanted to put it out there that it happens to everyone. I think that's something that that I bring into the metrics that I'm not afraid to talk about. You told me what you don't do well. I'm like 100 things.
My dad used to say a very practical sentence that says, "Winston Churchill also shits."
True. True.
You know, once you imagine that, you know, you're okay. So okay. So let's do this. So with respect to the time, give me the three lessons that you would give to an earlier Shiri or the next entrepreneur that would be put in his or personal Bible?
First, number one, breathe. Just breathe. It's okay. You don't need to get everything done at a certain time. And actually, if you take the time to every once in a while, just sit back and breathe and say, I have a good friend that she says, rega, rega. So that would be my first advice to really kind of, you know, you don't have to learn everything on the first day. You're not expected to do everything in a certain time. So I would say just breathe, breathe into it. And also, you know, when you stop for a second and breathe, everything looks less scary. Okay. Find yourself a good mentor. If there's something that I'm like jealous, it's funny to be jealous of something that I'm doing for someone, but sometimes they come up to me and it's like, God, I wish I had someone like me to tell them, no, you need to change this in your contract or go talk to this or that person, or no, this company is not such a great company, or I have someone to talk to from within the company or something like that. So find yourself someone. And a good tip about who that person would be is someone that doesn't have any interests. Okay, like it can't be someone that loves you, although it's really nice, you know, to hear from someone that loves you, but they have an interest. They don't want you to get hurt, or they don't want, it should be someone, particularly professional, that you trust, and you kind of, you create the boundaries of this soundboard. And this person is not supposed to give you the answers. This person is supposed to allow you this dialogue so you get the answer too, but you get someone. So first one is breathe. Second one is a mentor. And the third one, I always feel bad about this, like, because I'm a feminist. And then when I'm asked on stage, you know, what was the thing that most contributed to your career? And I say, sleep. I'm a good partner that would let you sleep, that would let you kind of see. I always say about my husband that, you know, I got married very young. And then, you know, like a year after, he's like, are we going to have kids? I'm like, no, I'm 24. We're not going to have any kids. And then at 25, and then at 26, he's like, are we ever going to have any kids? And then I said to him, listen, I'm afraid that I'll never sleep again. And he said, okay, no problem. I'll get up for the kids at night. That's how I never got up at night. But the advice is find someone that would support your career. And not just, you know, you need to ask the second question, not just, honey, would you support my global career? Because honey's going to say, yes, of course. And if you leave it at that, you're going to end up with the kids and they're your responsibility. And then you got a husband that helps you and maybe don't. But ask the second questions. How do you see us doing it if we're both having a career? And do we put a price tag on it? Because that's not fair to begin with, because women get paid less. So career does not equal, you know, the price tag. Like if we both want to have careers, let's figure out how we're going to do this before we have the kids. And I can tell you with a lot of certainties that couples who have this conversation, the women are more successful, 100%. Mm-hmm. So these are my three advices.
Awesome. That was amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was telling myself from when then asked you for three things. I'm like, okay, good luck with that. And then you just knew exactly.
Yeah, a bunch of others, but I would say.
I could have said that. I like you. You definitely look like you have like at least about 11 more just in your left arm.
But you know, that's part of the thing. Pass it on. Pass it through. Like today, I'm going to give a talk at Pro Woman in Lachland. I did the same in Be'er Sheva. I do it in Shavuot. Like, I call it send the elevator down. If you're already on top, always send the elevator down. Don't get like so hyped about you being on top all by yourself. We want more women. Send it down. You're there. Help them come up. Let's fill the room. That's my philosophy.
Shiri, thank you for being a superhero. Okay, and and keep on giving some inspiration, helping other people. So that's what superhero does.
You keep on doing this. This is great, this podcast. I think, you know, you give a stage for so many like different people and different backgrounds, and the talk never sound the same. So I love it. Love it.
Thank you. I loved this conversation. I hope many, especially women, actually, many women listen to this.
Toda rabah.
Keep at it.
Bye.
That's all for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Also, if you have a moment, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review our podcast on the platform you're listening to. This will help others find our show.
And as always, if you know anyone who you think would enjoy our podcast, please share it with them. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back as usual on the first of the month.
Real life.
Superpowers.
Life.
Superpowers.